The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heck and want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/Discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at Discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
Keep your friends close, but your enemies closer.
We don't have many enemies here at CITR, but we do like to keep our friends close. And when you become a member of CITR, our friends are your friends. So join CITR today to get discounts at Audiopile, Red Cat, Vinyl Records, Hooked on Phono, Rufus Guitar and Drum Shop, Tapestry Music, The Cinematheque, Kerner's Pub, Stormcrow, The Pint, and Fortune Sound Club. For more info, visit CITR.ca/friends.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hi everyone, my name is Akshanya and you're listening to Season 6's All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. I'm joined by my Accessibility Collective teammates, Jesse, Arthi, Monica, and Jordan. I hope everyone's doing well and staying safe. The team and I have a great and important show lined up for you today. With the annual Bell Let's Talk Day coming up on Thursday, January 28th, we thought it would be important to talk about the campaign's mission to bring awareness about mental health and its impact on our lives. We are thrilled to bring you a songwriter, singer, and mental health advocate, Sarah Jickling, to be our guest today. However, before we chat with Sarah, let's go to our first song break. Here's Jesse with the first song.
Hey, LaShaya, and hey, everyone. Our first song of the show is with Run For Short and her song, I Drive Me Mad, off her new EP, Teenage Angst.
I can't quite help it, it's overwhelming sometimes. I wanna stick a cigarette in my eyes closed. Not sleeping, I'm stressed. You're dreaming, you're softly breathing, while I'm hyperventilating, pacing. I'm losing my patience, feeling bad about shit I didn't do. So dramatic, panic, I got pre-traumatic stress, 'cause nothing happened yet, but it did in my head. I drive me mad. It's stupid, it's just hard being human. Some days I wake up and I feel like I just wanna dye my hair neon green so I can't forget I'm me. Don't wanna think about drinking a glass of gasoline. I'm hyperventilating, pacing, I'm losing my patience, feeling bad about shit I didn't do. So dramatic.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Driving Me Mad off Renfro's short EP Teenage Angst. Lauren Eisenberg, or Ren for short, is an emerging artist on the alt-rock scene coming out of Toronto. Lauren attempts to describe the suffocating feeling of panic attacks through I Drive Me Mad, a diary of her own experience with anxiety. And now back to you, Lakshanya.
Thanks, Jesse. And now we're very pleased to start our show topic. Let's talk about mental health. We have a special guest here with us. She's a songwriter, singer, and a mental health advocate. Here's Sarah Jickling. Welcome to All Access Pass, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining us and taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you guys.
So starting the interview off with the question of, besides being a musician, who exactly is Sarah Jickling?
Yeah, I mean, especially with the pandemic, I definitely am asking that to myself a lot of the time, besides being a musician, right? Because there's not too much of a music industry going on right now. I am an artist who lives with bipolar disorder and anxiety disorder. I am somebody who, I'm a pole dancer. I draw, I have a podcast. I feel like I love to express myself basically in any shape or form. And I love to share my personal stories and to hear other people's personal stories, just in the sort of attempt to remind everybody that you're not alone in what you're experiencing. I currently do a podcast called Keep It Hush Hush, that is with a fellow bipolar disorder advocate. I worked with the BC Schizophrenia Society for 4 years, going around to high schools and performing my music and chatting with teenagers about psychosis and bipolar disorder. Unfortunately, again, not a thing right now, but it was a thing that I really loved doing. I love to tell stories.
Yeah, that sounds amazing, Sarah. Thank you for sharing that with us. Our second question is, growing up, who was your role model as far as musicians go?
Yeah. I think that the person who made me realize that I could write music, not just, play classical piano, which is what I did since I was very young, and not just write poems, which is another thing I did since I was very young, was probably the musician Kate Nash. When I discovered her music, I thought, this is somebody who sounds like me, who's having similar experiences to me, who plays piano like me, who kind of sings like me a little bit, like not Beyonce, not like an amazing, amazing singer, but somebody who's putting really, really real experiences into words, into funny words often, like, she's really herself. So I think that Kate Nash and around that same time, Lily Allen, another British musician who's just very herself and very, she doesn't take herself seriously, but she's very, very open and it's about the lyrics. That's kind of what gave me the sort of the courage to combine music, which I had been doing as sort of a thing that my parents had put me in. Classical piano, I was practicing classical piano all the time when I was a kid. And then I always wanted to be a writer, just from the time I was very, very young. So I think that looking up to those people and definitely like the other kind of like sort of indie girls of the time gave me the idea that, I didn't have to be an amazing singer, an amazing piano player, or really anything to share my story and to create music that other people like, that resonates with other people.
Wow, what a great answer, Sarah. And this next question is actually a two-part question. So us CITR listeners, we got a glimpse of the type of music you play on our show, All Access Pass, because we've played a lot of your music before in the past.
But
how would you describe your music? And you touched upon this part a little bit in your answer, but how did your love for music come about and where do you draw your inspiration from when writing music?
Right, yeah. So my inspiration for music is always changing. I started out, like I said, playing classical piano and wanting to be a poet. I want to say, like, as things sort of went wrong in my life, music became more and more important to me. And what I mean when I say went wrong is just like, when I started developing the first signs of bipolar disorder, so like late teens, early 20s. And before that, I thought, I had anxiety disorder, but I thought, I'm going to, do the thing where I go to university, get a degree, maybe get a master's degree, get a job, do that stuff. And then my bipolar disorder kind of like turned my world upside down. And the only thing that I could really cling to was songwriting. Like I could continue to create art. In fact, it was one of the things I did the most when I was in sort of a bad place. So it became way more of my personality and how I identified myself during those really tough times. Like songs just kind of like poured out of me when I was really struggling. And of course I dropped out of school many times. I had lots of disputes, I guess, with band members. I was bouncing from job to job, friend to friend. I think when you experience rapid cycling bipolar disorder, you're kind of like put on this roller coaster. And music was sort of the constant there. So I was always just writing music. Nothing was going to stop me from doing that. And whoever it was at the time who was inspiring me, whether that's some point it was Gwen Stefani to even like more recently like Ariana Grande, like, you know, just like I find inspiration from so many people, especially strong women in music. I would kind of like change my sound, change my focus. My focus originally was, you know, using the piano a lot. And then as I became comfortable as a performer, I wanted to kind of run around on stage. And so I incorporated less and less of the piano. And then as I sort of started to listen to musicians who were really strong vocalists, I thought, you know, maybe I could be an okay singer. Maybe I'm a good singer. And I started taking some vocal lessons. So, you know, then I started focusing more on my voice. But the one constant has just been like writing. I think you'll find a lot of people with bipolar disorder say that they have a lot of creativity. But I just think it's because bipolar disorder kind of like takes out, when you're in like kind of like a hypomanic state, it takes out the critical voice. So you can kind of just like create. Now that I'm more stable, it's definitely more difficult to create, but I am now inspired by, you know, comedians like Maria Bamford, who are, you know, stable and taking care of themselves, but continue to create art in a way that works for them. So like right now, I would just say my biggest influence is Maria Bamford, even though she's not a musician, but she's somebody who's speaking her truth, which is to me like the goal.
Building off your incredible answer to that question, another two-part question would be like, what inspired you to be like so vulnerable about your mental health struggles within your music, if there was anything in particular? And where have you seen progress in mental health treatment and awareness within the music industry specifically? And are there any improvements you would like to make personally?
Yeah, so when I started out writing music, it was because I was inspired by hearing other people write music about things that I related to. So I wrote, you know, about being a nerd and being bullied and that kind of stuff because I was a teenager, and, you know, about being anxious. But as things got darker, things got a lot more serious in my life, it definitely was a conscious choice to speak about it and write about it. And it just kind of was like, that's what I have to do to take care of myself, is I have to share who I am and what I'm experiencing with other people, even if it makes some people uncomfortable, because there are those other people out there who feel seen because of it. So I feel like sometimes people think of me as like the bipolar musician, like she's always talking about bipolar disorder and stuff, but I do that because that's my life, that's my experience, and I'm a musician who writes about their experience. It's the way I see the world. And if there's other people out there who, you know, who can relate, who that speaks to, that's, you know, my job is done. Like, that's really what, you know, my goal is. In the music industry, though, I mean, it's always been a sort of a thing in the music industry that, like, you know, the sort of the struggling artist, crazy artist, like, you know, sort of the idea that musicians and creative people are kind of crazy and they kind of like have to suffer in order to create beautiful art. That's like a thing, right? And so I think that the most important thing that I would like to see from the music industry is a push towards encouraging people to be okay and to take care of themselves rather than continue to live your life in chaos, to be uncomfortable, and so that you can write good art. Like make good art, write good songs. Because that was something that I really, really struggled with, is that I was like, I want to, you know, I want to be a musician, and clearly something is wrong. I've been diagnosed with bipolar disorder by some doctors, but I don't want to stop being a musician. So I guess I have to keep living this life, because treatment means I lose my creativity. Being stable means I lose, songwriting inspiration or whatever. And I think that's really prevalent in a lot of places in the music industry. So while it's a place where you can say, yeah, I'm mentally ill and people won't, fire you, it's also a place where when you say I'm getting treatment, I'm stable, people kind of think it's sort of stigmatized. I definitely have had a lot of people sort of say strange things when I take my medication and completely disagree with me when I talk about like my diagnosis and my healing journey. So that's really where I'd like to see the change in the music industry.
Kind of expanding on what you've kind of opened up with us about just now, and only if you're totally comfortable with us asking this, could you tell us like your journey with mental health and how you realized it was something you're struggling with?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I always struggled with anxiety, like from the time I was really, really young. I had panic attacks when I was 4. I mean, I didn't know what they were. And I don't think, my parents knew what they were, but I look back and I think, well, that's what that was. And I have a lot of mental illness in my family. Mental illness is often genetic. So I think a lot of people with mental illness will, agree that usually you're surrounded by it. But I think that things didn't get really bad until I sort of was graduating from high school. And I was unable to, do really simple things. I was, I was either like in a place where I like couldn't get out of bed, or I was not sleeping for days, staying up for days. I was getting to points where I felt so depressed that I felt suicidal for the first time in my life. And then I would get to places where I thought, oh, I'm a genius. I'm going to be, the next Taylor Swift. Like, I'm going to be great. And like, those are kind of, the two sides of me that people saw. And when you're living your life like that, I mean, it's very easy for people to take advantage of you. and definitely people did. It's very easy for people to get fed up with you. And definitely people did. I kept going to, I went to a doctor and they diagnosed me with bipolar disorder, but I said, no, that doesn't sound like something I had. That sounds like a crazy person. And then when I actually tried to get better in like sort of more holistic ways, instead of like facing the diagnosis, things just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And eventually I basically just wasn't able to do anything anymore. And I had just, at this point, I think I had just canceled a cross Canada tour, lost all of my bandmates again. And I just, at this point, I went to the hospital and I was like, I don't care if I never write a song again. It's not worth feeling like this to be a musician. And that's when I really got treatment and really started accepting that mental illness is a big part of my life. And when I started speaking about it in a big way. And of course, I have been able to write songs and I have been able to be a musician, while more stable, while under treatment. It's difficult. It's very difficult to do, but it's possible. And so my solo albums, because previously I was kind of going under the name The Oh Well, so we were like a band. And then my solo albums are really when I was just like pulling out all the stops and saying like, guys, this is what's actually happening. And I feel like the sort of happy, bubbly version of me, which is very much still part of who I am, was there, but was revealed kind of the darkness that had been sort of hiding or that only existed if you knew me in real life and hadn't just listened to my songs. So, that was when I started getting that treatment. I mean, it's a long journey. I think for anybody with bipolar disorder, because there's no magic pill, there's lots of different ways you can be treated. It was very difficult to get the right treatment. And right now, I'm on 5 different medications. I do exercise like 2 hours a day in order to kind of keep myself stable. I definitely still am a little bit all over the place, but I'm not rapid cycling. I know you guys sort of, we were chatting, and you may have seen that I kind of have like a sort of like spacey brain. I think that's part of the medication that I'm on. You know, you take the good with the bad, and like, okay, if it means I can sleep at night and I'm not going to go into hypomania or mania, I'll take it. But I definitely lose my keys 5 times a day, like that kind of thing. So that's where I'm at right now, is just like living life, coping as much as I can. And of course, I've got my songs, and I've got my pole dancing, and I've got my podcast now. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing your journey with us. And I definitely think there's a lot of people out there who can relate to some of what you're saying. So yeah, thank you for sharing that with us. We'll chat more with Sarah, so please stay with us, but let's go for another song break. Arthi, take it away.
Thanks, Lakshanya. Our second song of the show is from XRE. Here's her new song, Jump State.
Sometimes I think that I'd be better off alone, just cause my instinct is to flee when things go wrong. It's a flaw and I need some attention, some redirection in my heart. Maybe you could teach me a little something about staying when things get hard. I'm used to saying sorry, but it's not working for me. It's just a reflex, reflex, reflex. I gotta reset, I don't wanna leave yet. I'm in a jump state, it's fight or flight, babe. I'm in a jump state, but I'm gonna stay. It's just a reflex, reflex, reflex. I'm in a jump state. But I'm trying to learn, and I walked out on you and I felt so unheard. It's no excuse, but I needed to mention. The tension pushed me out the door. You gave me reasons to leave you, but I hear you deserving of something more.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was Jump State by XRE. XRE is a singer, songwriter, and mental health advocate from Toronto dealing with a variety of comorbid disorders. She manages to turn this pain into power. And now back to you, Lakshanya.
So this episode is centered around the annual Bell Let's Talk Day, which is a campaign to bring awareness on mental health and struggles with mental health. And Bell Let's Talk Day is on Thursday, January 28th. We're happy to have a songwriter, singer, and mental health advocate, Sarah Jickling, as our guest today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
So our next question is, can you share a bit with us about how you dug yourself out of your difficult times? What was your biggest barrier, and how did you overcome all of this?
My biggest barrier was self-acceptance, or was acceptance of the mental illness, accepting that things were wrong. I think denial is something that a lot of people with mental illness experience, because you don't want to admit that you have a chronic mental illness or, you know, something scary like bipolar disorder. You want to think that you're okay, you're just going through something difficult, but you're going to, you know, you're just going to eat enough kale that you'll wake up and you'll feel better. And like really accepting that, no, there's something really wrong and you need to go to a doctor or a counselor or a psychiatrist or all of the above. and you really need to dedicate your life to getting better, that is a hard pill to swallow. And especially when people are spreading rumors that, like, it's not even a rumor, it is harder to create while you're on medication for bipolar disorder. I don't think it's because it takes away creativity. I think it's because it stops bipolar from taking away the critical voice. But it took me a long time to just sort of accept that I needed help, and that to accept that I needed as much help as I did. And, you know, I think once I started to see a psychiatrist, not just walk-in clinic doctors, and it's very difficult to see a psychiatrist in BC. You gotta get put on wait lists that are like a year long. And of course, if you have bipolar disorder, especially rapid cycling, like, you're gonna cancel it because you're gonna go back into a hypomanic or normal state where you think, I'm fine, I'm great, I can't even remember why I wanted help. So I guess, like, you definitely will experience that, I think, in a place where you have such long wait lists, which is unfortunately why a lot of people end up having to go to the hospital to get help. You kind of don't get help until you're like at rock bottom or you're sort of in an emergency. And that's a flaw in the system. But I think that, you know, I did have to get to a point where I was attempting suicide. I was, you know, doing really, really dangerous things. And it was really, really bad. And it had been going on for years and years that finally I was able to get the help that I got. And that wasn't right away, you know. You see one psychiatrist, it's not the right fit. You got to go to another one. You got to really push for the right medication. I think it was a 2-year journey to find the medication that I was on. Once I found the right psychiatrist, you got to do therapy. You got to do a group therapy. I really recommend DBT, that's dialectical behavioral therapy. I found that exercise was absolutely one of the most important things in my life. And then I had to find something that gave me joy while I exercised, which turned out to be pole dance and aerial arts, which I do all the time, which is the reason why I'm downtown right now and always, is because I'm always at the pole studio. I'm always doing, you know, aerial silks or pole or whatever. But you have to find stuff that works for you, and you have to be your own advocate, and you have to push and push and push. And that is so hard, because you'll want to give up a million times. And I don't blame anybody who's like, you know what, I'm sick of this. I've had too many bad counselors. I've had too many bad therapists. I've had too many bad side effects from the medication. I don't like this. I am done. But I really do recommend people pushing through, because I never ever would have thought I would be in a place where I could say that I haven't had suicidal thoughts in like years. You know, I never ever thought I would be in that place. If you told me that when I was during the worst parts of this, I would have been like, no, you're lying, absolutely lying. So it is possible, and it's not just me. I know other people who have overcome this stuff and who are a lot more stable. My podcast, Keep It Hush Hush, the host on that also has bipolar disorder, and she's also reached a place that's like a lot more healthy. So I would just say, like, the hardest thing is just like pushing once you've actually accepted that you need help. It's a very long journey.
Thank you for your answer. And besides music, what other tools or mediums do you use to enlarge the debate on mental health awareness?
Well, I think that I like to bring mental health awareness to everything I do. I've been working on sort of like dance routines that to me are about mental health, and I've been working on I've been doing some illustration lately, illustration of different types of bodies to talk about body positivity and that kind of stuff, which I believe is very much tied in with mental health and eating disorders, something I also struggle with. I like to continue to share my story, like on Instagram or through a podcast or through whatever, through talking to you guys, because I think that's the most important thing, is just really being honest. And I think that, you know, if I find another artistic medium that makes me happy, I'll you know,
be doing mental health advocacy through that too, because it's my life. It really is every day when you have a mental illness like this, a chronic mental illness, it's every day that you have to deal with it. So, you know, that, of course, that's what you're going to write art about, right? That's what you're going to make art about. And I'm definitely not stopping anytime soon.
Like we saw, like on your Instagram and through your creativity, you're a very, very visual artist. So how is the process of creating concepts for your videos and photos and, you know, anything creative that you do? And how do they speak to your music and mental health?
Yeah, I originally went to graphic design school when I first tried to go to university. I always have loved visuals along with writing and singing. Whenever I get to work with photographers, videographers, makeup artists, I love to sort of share with them like my vision. I sometimes feel like a control freak, but I really do have like a lot of visuals in my head when I'm singing, when I'm writing, like sometimes when I'm, you know, creating a song, like producing it, recording it, I like am imagining a dance that goes along with it. It's just like, I don't know, it's just part of what I do and how I always think. So when I actually get an opportunity to create that, it's very exciting. So yeah, I've done a couple of music videos, I think three, or I'm about to do a fourth that include aerial arts. And that's been really exciting because, you know, I collaborate with a choreographer and with all the people who are involved with visuals, and usually I'm the director and kind of sort of make the decisions around a lot of the visuals, but working with choreographers has been so interesting because I don't think I'm good enough at dancing at this point to really like make my own stuff. But communicating with choreographers and seeing how they interpret my music is so fascinating, and I have so much fun with it.
The next question is about your albums. So the first album of yours, When I Get Better, and then also how that compares to your most recent album, The Family Curse. So while both of your albums contain relatively similar subject matter and that it really tackles the issue of mental health, the shift to kind of describing more of your familial relationships all in your most recent album also carries kind of different sounds than your previous album. So what was the process or the creative process on the production side for this reinvented sound within your latest project?
With my new album, The Family Curse, I was really inspired by Lemonade by Beyonce. And see, that's kind of like, I feel like, again, like a visual thing and a musical thing at the same time. Watching the visual album Lemonade really, really inspired me to write again. And I loved how in that visual album, she, you know, starts out sort of sharing with the world that her marriage has not been great and that her husband has been cheating on her. And this is something that, like, I mean, Beyonce is a very private public figure. So to me, it was like really moving. And yet by the end of Lemonade, she's singing with her husband, like he's back and they've sort of resolved things. And so I thought, oh my gosh, I could do that with my family. And my idea, basically every single song, I was like, okay, this is the first song on the Lemonade album. How could I kind of create my own version of it when I'm dealing with my family? This is the one where she's really mad. Okay, I'm gonna create one where I'm really mad. It inspired me so much. So a lot of the sounds that you hear there are like inspired by Beyonce and then also other really pop artists like, yeah, Ariana Grande and like Taylor Swift. And I'm a huge fan of those women. So, you know, using the kind of production that they use to me is like just a lot of fun. It's also, to me, it sounds powerful. So I definitely wanted to be powerful in this album. And so when I was writing it, I thought, okay, yeah, that, you know, by the end of the album, I'll have resolved all the problems with my family. And spoiler, I didn't. But I still feel like it was a good project and that I got a lot out of it, even if it definitely made some of my family members very upset. I felt like I had to say those things and tell people what happened in my childhood, because I think it's a really important part of my mental illness. And I think it's an important part of a lot of people's mental illness and trauma. So yeah, it was really all Beyonce.
And discussing mental health, especially combined with family, is something that a lot of people find very tough to talk about, as you kind of already touched on. But what pushed you or made you feel comfortable enough to create the album?
So before I had started, when I wrote When I Get Better, my first solo album, I was still on and off meds. I was not stable. And then there was a long period of time where I didn't write anything because I was stable and I thought I would never be able to write again. And when I, you know, suddenly felt that inspiration again and wrote my first song, which was about my dad, I thought, wait, I can create again. I thought I was never gonna write another song. So to me, it was like too much to give up. If I was like, okay, but I can't write about my family, so I guess I'm gonna go back to writing. Yeah, so when I had the inspiration to write about my family, it felt like, you know, rain after a really long drought. And I didn't want to throw it away. And I told my mom, I said, either I write this album or I stop writing, or I'm not a musician anymore. Because it's the only thing that's inspiring me right now. And it's like, it's coming out of me, and this is the first time that's happened since my medication. And so that's why I felt like I had to write this one. And I did take both of my parents to therapy separately, told them what the album is about, tried my very, very best to prepare everybody. And yet it didn't really work. my parents just sort of stopped listening to my music, which is okay. You know, it's better than the worst case scenario. In my head, I thought I could maybe like solve our family problems by writing this album. And I don't think that's true, but yeah, I think I ended up at least healing a lot of my own sort of wounds in terms of having to keep quiet about the stuff that happened. Yeah,
thank you so much for sharing that with us and kind of talking about how you're able to be vulnerable in your music in that way. So we'll chat more with Sarah, so please stick around, but we need to go for another song break. Monica, who are we listening to next?
Yeah, thanks, Lakshanya. And our next artist obviously needs no introduction from us. So without further ado, our third and last song of the show is actually from our interviewee, Sarah Jickling, and her Good Bad Luck. Here is the song, The Curse, from her album, The Family Curse.
Sounded like a baby bird, and when I spoke up you could barely even hear the words. So I would joke instead, I never meant to keep a secret, but my silence was convenient. Now I'm feeling mad. Rains when we show up, the reason why the flowers die in my veins rain. reason why I won't be happy when I'm all grown up and everybody hates us, talks behind our backs, humiliates us, make it stop, I just can't say this.
Welcome back to All Access Pass on CITR 101.9 FM. The song you just heard was The Curse from our interviewee Sarah Jickling and her Good Bad Luck off the album The Family Curse. Now to you, Lakshanya.
Thanks, Monica. So in honor of the annual Bell Let's Talk Day, a campaign to bring awareness on mental health, on Thursday, January 28th, we're very proud to have a songwriter, singer, and mental health advocate, Sarah Jickling, join us on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Jumping right back into the questions, how has the pandemic been for you? And, you know, based on how you've been, do you have any advice for people who have to isolate and quarantine still?
Yeah, the pandemic has been really hard because, I mean, it's been hard for everyone and especially everyone in the music industry, because the music industry is kind of shut down in a big way. I lost my job again. That was tough and I... The program was actually permanently shut down, so all of our equipment was sold. So I definitely had to grieve that because we had crazy tours booked. We were going to go to like very remote areas in BC and talk to, you know, people who definitely don't normally get to have mental health advocates come talk to them. So it was just like we were doing really well and we were really excited. We got a lot of new funding and then suddenly, you know, everything stopped. And so I think that for people who are in an industry that kind of got shut down, I have to say, just like be really, really kind to yourself and remember that you are in a pandemic, a global pandemic, and you lost your job because of it and you're stuck inside because of it. Please do not put very much pressure on yourself. I definitely for a while was like, oh, why am I feeling so unmotivated? I'm not doing anything, like I'm not being productive. And then I was like, wait, I lost the first job I've ever really liked. And I can't go out and do things like, you know, for a long time, the pole studio was closed. I can't go out and do the things that are my coping skills. I can't go see the people who help me cope. Of course I feel terrible. Of course I do. And I think everybody needs to really think like, I'm allowed to feel terrible right now. And if you think, oh, but you know, it's been long enough, I should stop feeling terrible now. I would just say, every day is a new surprise with the pandemic, and like I think that it's perfectly acceptable to feel terrible right around now, especially like, you know, winter, you can't go outside as much, things like the like gyms are getting shut down and reopened shut down, and a lot of other things are remaining shut down. Just be so gentle with yourself, because this is a legit hard time for literally everybody. And especially if your industry has been shut down, and especially if you're dealing with a mental illness, it's going to be a hard time. So you deserve all of the love and all of, you know, you're a worthy human being, even if you're just, you know, feeding yourself, getting through the day, that's enough.
Thank you, Sarah. I think that's a really important message for all of our listeners to know, to just be kind to ourselves, because I think, yeah, a lot, as you said, a lot of people are struggling right now. So this is something really important that everybody should keep in mind. The next thing is, what are your thoughts on campaigns like Bella's Talk? Do you think it generates a decent amount of awareness, or do you think it's a helpful way to talk about mental health?
Yeah, thanks for asking this question. It's such a tough one. I think that having awareness campaigns is good. I think that it's better than not having any sort of awareness in terms of mental health. I worry about, you know, people thinking, oh, we only have to talk about mental health on this day, you know. I worry about people not thinking about the people who think about it every single day. Because for a lot of us, that's, you know, we think about it every single day, and someone's like, hey, guess what, it's Bella's Talk Day, and you're like, okay, well, sure, let's talk, I have been talking this whole time. So the thing that I would love to have like corporations like Bell really think about how different things, how this world is really ableist, and like how we can make the world a better place for, like, Canada a better place for people with mental illness. Is there something that they can do there? However, you know, having them, you know, sort of have, you know, big mental health advocates as part of the campaign and just putting it out there, you know, wouldn't happen in every country. So I am appreciative of that. Yeah, as much as it's kind of sometimes ends up being hypocritical, because, you know, I don't really know what the policies of Bell are, but I know like some people think, oh, well, that company was not very helpful when I was working there and I was trying to, or like say I have a phone that I need to pay, and like the company is not helping me. They just are saying hashtag let's talk, but they're not doing any actions. I totally understand. I'd understand that it feels really empty, and especially because a lot of people jump on board and then they jump off board. But you know what? It's something. And like just thinking that, like, I don't know, 10 years ago or 12 years ago, I hadn't even heard of what anxiety was, even though I had it. I thought bipolar disorder was terrifying. And now I know, because I've been in a lot of high schools, that like, this is stuff that's being taught at school. This is stuff that's being normalized. So anything we can do to normalize talking about it is good. But I totally think that anyone's criticism of it is also valid.
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of this in just right now, your previous answer. But our next question was going to be, for those who are not dealing with mental health, like, in your opinion, what else can what else can they do to help those who do have mental illnesses?
Yes, I think that I think anyone with like a chronic illness or a disability or whatever we all kind of understand each other and give each other a lot of grace, and you guys have been so wonderful. And I would just really encourage everybody else to do that too. Like, if you have somebody who you know is dealing with mental illness, or honestly, if you don't know, but you just, you know, you may as well treat everybody as if maybe they are, and like, especially if somebody comes and talks to you about it, be kinder to people and try and make like allowances for them and modifications for them, and, you know, make things more accessible. Because I think, like, saying a person uses the hashtag Bella's Talk, and then they get really upset that, say, this person with a mental illness didn't hand in a project on time or had to miss a day of work, or, you know, anything like that. That's really hypocritical, and that's not okay. I think you have to remember, mental illness is the same as a physical illness. In fact, like, it is a physical illness, because our brains are part of our bodies. So just treat people with mental illness the same way that you would treat someone with a physical illness. Even though you can't see it, it affects everything that we do. And it does make it hard to do simple things that you think are simple. So really just like doing what you can to help those people, especially if they ask for help, and to believe them, is one of the most helpful things I think I can do. Like people can do. I have a teacher who teaches pole, and you know, she was always saying stuff like, oh, I think it's really disrespectful when people are late. And I just talked to her and said, like, I totally understand that. But also for some people, it can be hard to either keep track of time or, you know, depending on what their disability is, like, you know, actually walk places or, you know, wake up on time. There's a lot of different factors that can make certain things like people think are simple, very difficult. So just sort of like softening up, especially for those people who you know are struggling, and just being like, you know what, it's okay, you're a little bit late, but I don't mind. Just like take a breath, it's gonna be fine. That was like one of the nicest things that anyone's done for me. So really just being like, it's okay, you're okay. I thought that was really lovely.
So just one of our last few questions, but is there anything that you're working on currently? Anything with your music, your awareness? Projects like that.
Yeah, I would ask people to check out my podcast. It's called Keep It Hush Hush with Sarah and Jessica. And we talk about mental health and mental illness. And it comes out twice a month. So yeah, you can find us on Instagram or, you know, Spotify, anywhere where you find podcasts.
All right, awesome. And last but not least, is there anything else you would like to say to our CITR listeners?
First of all, I would like to say thank you for listening to CITR, because CITR is awesome. And, you know, for supporting people who have disabilities, have chronic illnesses, have mental health issues, but who are like still creating and still doing it, you know, and like, we really appreciate when you take the time to listen to things like this, because they don't always get broadcast on big networks and stuff like that. So thank you. And if any of this did resonate with you, like, just remember to be kind to yourself, and just know that you're not alone.
Awesome. That wraps up our show for today. Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today. We definitely did learn a lot about mental health, and we really, really appreciate you being vulnerable with us and speaking about your own experiences.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate, chatting with you guys.
Yeah. So if you're interested in joining our team or think there's an issue we should bring up on our show, please send us an email at accessibilitycollective@citr.ca.
Special thank you to Sarah Jickling for chatting with the Accessibility Collective today.
Please like our All Access Facebook page, and if you're on Twitter or Instagram, or both, please follow us at @access_CITR.
And if you missed part of our live show today and want to listen again, or maybe you want to listen to our past shows, you can do so on CITR.ca by going on the search box and typing in All Access Pass.
Take care and stay safe. Stick around for more CITR programming coming up next. Bye, everyone.
I begin to see. Hey, I'm Sarah from Alien Boys, and you are listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.